I can.
Okay. I got it. All right, here we go. We've got, we have five videos here. I'm trying to juggle them to make sure we give them to you in the proper order. One of them is very interesting. As you know, many, many of the hospitals in this country, and probably many other countries, if not most, who have bought into this genocide program, have death protocols. They have death procedures that they will visit upon anyone who is admitted to the hospital. A lot of people have gone in saying, I don't want the vaccine. I do not want remdesivir. Their families say the same thing. And guess what? They get one or both. Now, Eric and I had a friend who was given remdesivir against his will, and it killed him. So this is happening. It's a death protocol. And underlying all of that, we're going to get to that video in just a couple minutes. In fact, maybe we'll start with it. Let's start with it. Because this is important. If you go to a hospital, your life is on the line. Whether you go in there for, you know, a broken leg or whatever, it doesn't matter. You're in the hands of people who in many cases are incompetent. They shouldn't be in those positions. They don't give a damn. And do remember that 2 years ago or thereabouts, two-thirds of the professional health care givers in this country took the shot and stayed on. One-third walked. They said, no way, and they left. So you got the vaxxed two-thirds running the show now. And now they're bringing in nurses from all sorts of third-world countries. I mean, South America, Philippines. I'm sure some of them are very nice. But some of them, and we've heard stories, that they can't even read an EKG, all right? That's a nurse, supposedly. So then there's much more to it than that. Welcome back, young lady.
Oh, thank you. Made it through another week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Erica was Miss Massachusetts once, but she'll never talk about it. Never. Well, you're my Miss Massachusetts. How's that? Okay. Now, we've got this this death protocol thing. Now, I have a video, and you did read me that, the reader. And I guess, why don't you go ahead and read that again? Then I'll play the video and see. I'm not sure which one we have here. I got a 1 minute and 33-second video. That's all I have.
Okay. Hold on.
They didn't even have beauty contests anymore, do they? Hasn't LGBT done away with all of them by now? I'll bet they have.
Probably. All right. Let me see. Who's writing this? All right. This was an interview that Steve Kurtz...
Sense Receptor is writing.
Yeah. Okay. So this is on X, Sense Receptor. And this is a nurse talking, I believe, in the U.K.,
right.
Okay. The narrative goes, quote, there were people that were coming in dressed in all black uniforms, and they were hanging remdesivir, even without our knowledge, on these patients.
Okay, stop. Even without our knowledge. Now, this is coming from a nurse, we think. So there are staff in the hospital. She doesn't even know who the hell they are, and they're literally hanging drip bags of remdesivir on patients without even talking to regular staff. This is crazy. Go ahead.
Seemingly corroborating the stories of unidentified, quote, death squads that DeVoy says she's been made aware of thanks to friends and family of affected patients, Nurse Erin Olshevsky, widely known for her whistleblowing after witnessing murder with hospital protocols at Elmhurst Hospital in Queens, New York in 2020, described an eerily similar phenomenon in a 2024 interview with the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, noting that strange people were coming into the hospital dressed in all-black uniforms and administering remdesivir without the other nurses' or doctors' knowledge.
This is preposterous. It's crazy. I keep using that word, but what other word? It's insane? Fine, whatever. It's deadly insane.
Okay, she is quoted as saying, there were people that were coming in to Elmhurst Hospital dressed in all black uniforms, and they would come into my patients' rooms and demand that I give them their blood. And I would ask, where are the orders? Olszewski says. The nurse adds, now I know, almost 4 years later, that they were experimenting on patients without the patient's permission or the family's permission, and they were hanging remdesivir, even without our knowledge, on these patients.
Can you believe this, dear friends? All black uniforms in a hospital, and regular staff doesn't know who the hell they are or what they're doing until people notice and figure it out. That is really quite something. If you think about it, they couldn't be more obvious. All black. Go ahead.
When Steve Kirsch asks, who were these people? Olszewski responds that she has no idea. A few days prior to her being fired from her position at the time, Olszewski says, I went and talked to management about this one nurse practitioner, supposedly, who had no name badge, nothing, and I'm like, what are they doing? Like, there's no order for this. And they're threatening me. She actually had threatened me in that room that you will be gone soon. And sure enough, I was, Olszewski says. So there was more to the hospital murders that we don't even know, that I don't even know. So you never got an answer? And to this day, you do not know who these people in the black suits were? Kirsch asks. No, Olszewski says.
Truly incredible. There was an organized national campaign. Genocide. Another part of the whole genocide program. And they were killing people, probably by the hundreds of thousands in hospitals here.
Yeah.
With either their misdirected satanic protocols or literally hands-on death squads going into the hospitals and taking over. This is really something. All right. Driving past a hospital is kind of like whistling past a graveyard now. It's very scary. Here's the video, and it may be the same thing. I'm not sure. I just don't know which this is. But in any case, we'll hear it.
I learned there were people that were coming in dressed in all black uniforms. We wore like a navy blue all travel nurses wore like a navy blue uniform. And they would come into my patients' rooms and demand that I give them their blood. And I would ask, where are the orders? So now I know, almost 4 years later, that they were experimenting on patients without the patient's permission or the family's permission. And they were hanging remdesivir, even without our knowledge, on these patients.
Wow. Who were these people? They're employed by the hospital? They're not employed? Do you know who they are?
I have no idea. But
and to this day, you have no idea who they are?
No.
Did you ever ask the hospital, your hospital management, who are these people?
I did. And ironically, so I think it was May 25th when I was fired. Like a few days prior to that, I went and talked to management about this nurse practitioner, supposedly no name badge, nothing. And I'm like, what are they doing? Like, there's no order for this, and they're threatening me. And she actually had threatened me in the room that, you know, you'll be gone soon. And sure enough, I was. So there is more to it that we don't even know, that I don't even know.
So you never got an answer, and to this day, you do not know who these people in the black suits were?
No.
Okay, repetitive but important. So there you go. Be careful. Make plans now, even if you don't expect to be going near a hospital. Have them ready. Print it out. Just make it clear. If you give this person remdesivir or the COVID, quote, vaccine, put it in quotes, you will be sued from top to bottom. Something. You've got to be forceful. You have to have an advocate. And try and come up with a family situation in terms of advocacy, because if you get into a car wreck or something, you won't have an advocate unless they know where you are or if you've made prior plans to have someone act in your best interests. These are very difficult days, so don't take chances. Anyway, that was interesting. I don't know where the other video is, if there is another one.
There was one, and that one pertained to what was happening in the UK in some of right. those hospitals. And the nurse, I believe it's Jackie DeVoy, D-E-E-V-O-Y, Jackie DeVoy,
uh-huh.
Playing God, an investigation into medical democide in the UK. And that was posted a month ago.
Right.
You can hear the full interview on Hearts of Oak on Rumble.
Right. Well,
Hearts
if you can find it,
Oak.
Send it over. Maybe we'll try and duck
okay.
it in here. It did not show up, or I'm just not seeing it.
I don't have the short one either, but I've got this one.
Okay. Now, for those of you who have been following this horror for years with us, you'll know who we think are the credible voices to consider. That doesn't mean that you're supposed to believe anything we suggest. Just use your own mind. Use your own discrimination. But one of the best, consistently, has been PhD Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who has been deeply, profoundly immersed in this genocide from the beginning. She was one of the first, in addition to us, who was trying to warn people about shedding, which, of course, is still being denied by a lot of people. Denial is a big player. They knew all about denial and the masses and how people would say, nah, they would reject it. They understood human nature so well when they planned this out. So when they planned it out in terms of biological medical science, they made it an awesome killer. There's so many ways this thing will take human life and destroy it. It's stunning. I've used that expression many times, and it's 100% correct. So, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, anything you want to add about her? She's pretty good. MIT grad.
Yeah, she
computer
she
sciences.
Is, she still works for MIT, and she has researched this bioweapon really extensively. She's published several papers, usually with Peter McCullough, Greg Nye, and Anthony Kyriakopoulos. That team has done a really exhaustive research into the many ways that these injections are harming people. And very well referenced material,
right.
And good interpretations.
Yeah, she's really a above reproach. She's excellent. We've always featured her. Now, she said similar things to what you're going to hear. It's just a real short video. In the past, about shedding, we know that shedding of spike protein is probably the front line issue. We've worried and had expressed major concern about, well, what about the mRNA instruction packet, which is covered with liquid nanoparticles, LNPs? Could they be shed? Could the instructions be shed too? And we thought logically and competently and pragmatically that, yes, they could. And we pretty much warned that that is on the table as a possibility, if not a probability. Well, Dr. Seneff is echoing that now completely, and I think we'll just play this and let you hear it. This is very important information. For those who just don't accept shedding as being a problem, you know, first of all, good luck, and secondly, you have not been listening to this program. We have read accounts, many accounts, of people who have been shed upon and who have died in some cases later on. Who have been just destroyed physically, knocked out, put in bed for months simply from a hug and a kiss on the cheek. This is not a joke. Now, those are exosomes being transmitted in all likelihood. Unless it's a wet kiss, then you're getting into more of blood and blood products and saliva and so forth. But anything you want to add here before I play this? It's just a minute.
Yeah,
long.
Well, the exosomes are repackaged. They are comparable to the lipid nanoparticles, but they're produced by the person's body. Once the lipid nanoparticle goes in and the whatever cells take up that material and begin translating that material, they will create these exosomes, little vesicles, that contain the protein, in this case, the spike protein. But now we have evidence, studies have been done, showing that it isn't just the protein of interest that's being packaged, but it's also the intact messenger RNA, microRNAs, several different types of microRNAs, and those are considered post-translational modifications. They're additional instructions that tell the receiving cells what to do with this material. And even more worrisome is the cationic lipids, the toxic cationic lipids, are also packaged up in these exosomes. And I've often thought that, you know, the people that are shedding the vaccine material, is the material more toxic than what they received? And in some cases, I think it is. My thought was that, well, it's been processed by a human host and has a mammalian signature on it now. It's not as foreign as the material that was injected.
It's been refined and intensified. We'll get to that in a few minutes as well.
Explain why it only takes a little bit of shedding to really put someone in a bad state.
A lot of bang for your buck. That's fascinating how the human body could actually intensify what's being shared.
Yeah.
It apparently does. All right, and we've got this UK video we'll play a little later as well. So here's Dr. Stephanie Seneff again talking about shedding. Pay attention.
I think I started hearing about shedding, and at first I was very skeptical, but then when I started seeing this exosome situation, it becomes very easy for shedding to happen because it's been shown. And we talked about that in our paper, actually. We had quite a large section on the prion diseases in our paper, and we talked about the possibility of the exosomes getting released into the lungs and then out into the air, or even shedding through the skin. So I think it is someone who's not vaccinated could pick up spike protein and possibly even the code to make spike protein, because the messenger RNA itself has been found. The spike protein messenger RNA has been found to be able to be completely kept intact and shipped out inside an exosome, which is really quite frightening, because that means that someone could convey the machinery to make the spike protein, not just the protein itself, but the machinery to make it could be conveyed via exosomes that are shed and picked up by somebody else. But I think
okay, there you go. Now, just again, for any of you newcomers out there, the mRNA is the, we'll call it the instruction packet that goes into your cell, aided and abetted by the liquid nanoparticle to get into the cell. It takes over the cell in terms of its DNA. It reformats the cell to kind of just sit around and do nothing like it should be, except produce spike protein. That's all it does. So if you're getting spiked by being around the vaxxed, according to Dr. Seneff and others, and it's our position too, that this is quite possible, if not probable, you may be getting the mRNA instruction DNA packet to go into your body, take over your cells, and begin to manufacture spike protein forever in your body. That's on the table here. We cannot dismiss that. So think about it the next time you're hanging around people who have been vaxxed. And for you who out there who are vaxxed, it's not your fault. But also remember the N95 mask story that I ran. It was a study done at University of Maryland. It showed people who are giving off the COVID virus particles, if they wear a proper N95 mask, that amount that is being released by them onto other people can be cut back by 97%. You got it?
Mm.
All right, so N95 masks are not a joke. Don't get hung up on the constitutional issue. Get hung up on the personal health and safety issue, either for you if you're vaxxed because your immune system is messed up, or for anybody around you who's not vaxxed that you don't want to bring trouble to. Anything else I missed?
No, that about sums it up. And, you know, it is the N95 mask that's going to give you the most protection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Other than a respirator.
Remember, it has to be used properly. Now, a respirator is not some big hospital machine. It's simply, you've seen painters use a face mask. It's a full face mask or a half face mask. And it has two little filters on it. Sometimes they're square, sometimes they're round, one on each side. Those are respirators. And they really do a hell of a job. And I think you're going to see people begin to wear those fairly often here very soon, especially if they go ahead and turn loose this H5N1 or H5N2 or some variant thereof and claim it's out there and it's got a 57% case fatality rate. People will panic. They will panic again. They shouldn't, but they will. A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. All right, here is another little clip from Stephanie Seneff, and I've got to get to where is it? 9 minutes?
It should be queued up.
Okay, good. Just a sec. Okay. It has to do with, can mRNA bypass our stomach acid and get into our body? All right, that's primarily what she's going to talk about. All right, anything to add to that?
Well, the short answer to that is yes, it can. When it's packaged in an exosome, and this pertains to the topic of food, they want to put these mRNA vaccines in all kinds of things, vegetables, lettuce, meat, and there is evidence to show that when this material is encapsulated in an exosome, mm-hmm. that it can get past your stomach acids and,
right, that's pretty scary stuff, right through your already perforated and troubled intestinal walls, and then it gets into the blood, and you're already perforated and degrading endothelial barrier, that's the actual lining of the blood vessels, which are they're leaky.
You have a considerable amount of lymphoid tissue all along your intestinal tract, and that is a big portion of your immune system. So if this mRNA makes it past your stomach, which it's been shown to do, despite all the acid and the enzymes that are there, it can be picked up by this lymphoid tissue and then presented to your immune system and given instructions to do something.
What immune system? Okay. All right, here we go. Here's Dr. Seneff on, can mRNA, that's the instructions again, the genetic instructions, can they bypass our stomach acid if it is put into our food?
Does this mean, because Dr. Seneff, some people think that, let me see how I can phrase this, if they put mRNA into our food, for example, you know, I know that there was a university doing this with lettuce. Now they're talking about they want it in the beef. And then people were saying, well, no, the stomach will break this down and it won't actually get into the body through this. That means that, according to this study, they are able to package it in a way that bypasses that stomach acid.
Yes, if they put it inside exosomes, it can survive. And in fact, so I read a paper quite some time ago when I was first looking into the vaccines. I was really impressed with this paper. And the paper was published, I think, in 2019. So it's before COVID. But it was talking about the mRNA technology. And what they did was they looked at, they transfected these cells with the RNA technology. It's the same technology with those lipid nanoparticles and the cationic lipids. And then they had mRNA inside these lipid nanoparticles. And the messenger RNA coded for a protein called erythropoietin. So it's not SARS-CoV-2. It's not spike. It's a different protein. But what they showed, which was amazing, is that those cells that took up those nanoparticles, they took the nanoparticles apart, and then they reassembled the contents into new exosome, you know, little little lipid bodies of exosomes, and they put in their other stuff, but they also put in the messenger RNA one-to-one. So in the messenger RNA, you have all these nucleotides. They put in exactly as many cationic lipids as there were nucleotides. It was amazing that the cells released these exosomes that had the entire intact messenger RNA for the erythropoietin code, along with a number of cationic lipid. These cationic lipid particles are very toxic. These are what they add to the vaccine in order to induce an immune response, in order to help to open it up so that the mRNA can make protein. They have ways, reasons why they put this in there, but that synthetic cationic lipid is very toxic. They've shown that in studies. That gets packaged up inside the exosomes as well. So now you've got these exosomes, which are smaller than the nanoparticles. It's just the cell has basically repackaged up the contents of the nanoparticles into something that's actually far more potent, it seems to me, because it's got it can have the spike protein as well, because they put the spike protein into the nanoparticles, they make it and they put it in, but then they take the messenger RNA itself and put it in. So they've got spike protein, messenger RNA, microRNAs that can influence policy, in fact, can cause inflammation, because that's another study that I read that showed specifically with the spike protein. And this was a group in India. When these cells were exposed to the spike protein, they made exosomes containing the spike protein, but also containing specific microRNAs that cause inflammation and suppress type 1 interferon. So we wrote a whole paper around that topic, myself and Peter McCullough and Dr. Greg Nye and Dr. Anthony Kirikopoulos. The four of us published a paper, Innate Immune Suppression.
Okay. One of the key takeaways from what you just said, and we've mentioned this, exosomes. Had to go to the grocery store recently, and I just looked at all these shopping carts lined up where people will put their bare hands on the shopping cart handle, and they're often sweaty, thinking that their skin's going to protect them. Exosomes are smaller than nanoparticles. That's ridiculously small. That goes right through your skin, no problem at all. And they're like a little shopping bag to carry the supermarket reference a little further, a little shopping bag made by these cells full of mRNA, spike, all kinds of things that they take right through your skin. That's why we urge you to get some little cotton gloves and keep them in the car when you go shopping. If you have to grab a shopping cart, even with gloves on, I won't grab that handle. I'll grab underneath the handle. There's another area you can grab onto, or the sides. But minimize. This is not paranoia. This is not hyperbole. This is real hard science. Just like the simple fact that if you look at the COVID virus, and yes, there are viruses, and you look at the COVID bioweapons, you need to understand that there are dozens of pathways that those two will destroy life. Oh, it's a slow burn for many. Or it's an overnight or a couple of hours or even minutes for others. It varies. But the number of different ways that it takes life apart is staggering. This was designed by Satan in his own lab somewhere. I don't think it was Ralph Baric alone. This thing is too... They didn't miss a trick with this.
I agree. I remember... taking some notes on a shedding video, and there was a person that of some academic repute here that made a comment about these lipid nanoparticles being shed, and I think people are overlooking that. You know, we're so hyper focused on spike, and in reality, there's a lot more than spike being shed. So this person said, I studied molecular cell biology at York and Oxford. Needless to say, I did not get any injection of, quote, coated mRNA. If you read the research on mRNA treatments and coated delivery methods, you will find that heart-related secondary effects were recorded. It is also worth noting that during the normal cellular process of lipid recycling, the introduced coating agents are also broken down into subunits, which then become systemically active compounds in their own right, with many diverse potential side effects. That is what is not being said. The research I refer to was published by the people who developed these, quote, treatments. Side effects are and were predictable. Now you are seeing the outcome of the world's largest experiment.
Well, it's not an experiment. It's a deployed weapon. There's a hell of a difference. And these people who continue.
Kind.
Yeah, well, these people continue to hide behind that, and it's not doing the truth any favors. It's worse than that. It's not an experiment. It's not a failed effort to help confer immunity on anybody. It's a genocidal death weapon, for God's sakes. Death vaccine. Okay, and I should professionally mention that second Dr. Stephanie Seneff clip was from the Maria Z program. Good job, Maria. Okay. Now here we go onto the idea that sludge blood, or as Lindsay House calls it, mud blood, is, and we've said this many times, it's putting an inordinate strain on the human heart to try to push this crap through your vasculature. It's almost impossible. So here we have Dr. Chris Shoemaker, who's going to talk about this blood and the heart, and he's saying, tell him what he's saying. You got it.
Well, he's making reference to that study that came out of Japan. Now, granted, it was a small study. It was only out of one hospital, but they were looking at PET scans of people that went into the hospital for whatever reason. And what they realized was that the hearts of people who had been vaccinated were showing a high uptake of glucose in the heart.
And
typically, when you
absurd.
Have a PET scan, you're looking for cancer, and cancerous cells burn sugar, so the areas that are cancerous will light up, and you'll be able to see them. Well, the hearts of these vaccinated people, and I think it was as far out as 180 days. We're uptaking
at least
sugar.
6 months,
now, you know, you would
at
expect
least.
To see that in the brain. The brain uses a lot of glucose, but not the heart.
Mm-hmm. No, it's backwards for the heart. It shouldn't do that. That should not
right.
be the case.
No, the heart should be burning fat for its energy. You know, through oxidative phosphorylation, not by glycolysis.
Yeah. Okay. I don't like to sound like I'm belaboring something, but I don't, and this goes for vaxxed and unvaxxed, all of our listeners. You must take shedding seriously. If you don't by now, then you've been living in a cave or just don't want to. There's no over-the-top statement being made here at all by anyone. This is all predicated on science. So if you think shedding doesn't exist, we've done our best. That's all we can say. All right, here's Dr. Shoemaker. Now, remember, Nurse Anne was describing to us that when she'd draw blood on people in the hospital she was working at back then, a lot of times that blood would coagulate before it could make it to the lab. It was already thick to begin with. It would coagulate in the needle and in the receptacle for it. So when it got to the lab, they couldn't use it. That's sludge blood. All right? And we've also seen photos of that of blood of the vaxxed, full of little, what we think are little amyloid seedlings, I'd like to call them. They're just, the blood's full of them. And they can go anywhere and start to set up shop and grow. This thing is, again, it defies adequate description. It is that horrible, what they did. And they've done it. They've got 14. They have 14 billion injections and 8 billion people. They've done it. All right, stage one. Now they don't care. Nuclear war, they don't need it. If they want to get rid of people, just wait. People are dying. I think the 3 to 5 year window is correct. I think by the end of 2025, most of the Deagle pronouncements are going to be quite real. Now, he may have been talking about a nuclear war in addition to a biological war on humankind. That's possible, too. But he did predict, and 2003, 4, something like that, or his company did, that there would be only 100 million Americans left by the end of 25. We'll see. And I think it was 17 million in the UK. That sounds like a nuclear exchange to me, but time will tell. All right, here's Dr. Chris Shoemaker.
The emission tomography, positive emission tomography, is used all the time to follow up for cancer patients. You're looking for metastases. You're looking for areas of the body where there might be a whole bunch of blackness, small, little, and sometimes large areas of blackness, which is lymph nodes overreacting or metastases going to parts of the body. And the way it shows up is that it takes up extra glucose into those metastases and shows you the danger that you're now getting into because, unfortunately, the cancer treatment hasn't worked. That, in a general sense, is what PET scans are used for. In this instance, the doctors were actually a bit confused. They couldn't understand, well, why is the heart showing up black on our studies? The heart never has strange or extra glucose uptake. If you see in this study in front of us right now, there's two hearts to the left. Those are non-vaccinated people, and the heart is a soft gray in the middle of the chest. You can almost barely see it. It's not a whole lot different than the lung tissue or the arm tissue. It's a soft gray. You can see the liver just slightly darker gray below the heart. That's in the two pictures to the left, the unvaccinated. Two vaccinated people out of the 700, and by the way, all 700 vaccinated people had hearts that looked like these two pictures on the right. The two pictures on the right are showing blackness, high level doubling of the amount of effort. In this particular, in the one that's third over, it's 100% elevation in effort, 100%. The one to the far right is at about 50 to 60%.
He's talking over normal heart energy output to move the blood. One of those images showed the heart double effort to move the same normal amount of blood, and the other one a little less than that. These are inarguable pictures, hard science of how the heart is the heart can't take it, and that's why one of the reasons it's quitting so often. It's rather simple. Here.
It all gets graded out. If you look down to the larger efforts below, when you see just the heart looking being downed in a semicircle, the dark redness or the dark blackness, that is a heart that is working 100%, twice as hard as it should, and it does it for 6 continuous months after 2 vaccinations. These people, by the way, Laura Lynn, were feeling perfectly well. They weren't having chest pain. They weren't having sense of myocarditis. They think that everything's just fine. They're an athlete. They're a child. They think everything's fine. Suddenly in month 4, this is the explanation. This is the reason that we all can see now that Dr. Nakahara out of Japan, and the study, by the way, was also done in 3 other centers, Houston, Texas, Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, and Oxford University. Does that sound like a low-end group of studies? No. Oxford University, Mount Sinai in New York, Houston Hospital System, and the OK Hospital System in Tokyo with Dr. Nakahara as the lead scientist. And once they had done the appropriate things to look, and it's a backwards-looking study. You're looking back and you're trying to see, well, what's different? Why has one group got blackened-out hearts, which never happens, and another group, and the difference was unvaccinated had normal soft gray hearts, no sign of extra effort. Vaccinated people, of which the two on the right are examples of, are blacked out or reddened out hearts, where the effort index and glucose uptake goes from 3 up to 5 to 6. Goes from 3 up to 5 to 6. That is a doubling or a 100% elevation. The overall average, to be fair, the overall average was 46 to 50%, but even 50% extra work for 6 straight months. Are you kidding me? Are we now surprised why that lady you spoke of at the beginning had an unexplained heart attack X months after her shot? The explanation is now in front of everybody.
Wow. Okay, well, we have covered this many times. The heart simply cannot be asked to do this, to carry this kind of a load. It's horrible. The people who are behind this, there is no punishment too severe for them. And I will not excuse anyone who injected little children with this crap. No way.
I just heard a news clip today. Some little kid, boy, in daycare had a heart attack.
There you go. Yeah. Well, we've shown you photos of vaxxed blood. You've seen how it is. It's dark. It's black almost, blue-black, deep. This is just very difficult sometimes for even us to deal with. It's no pun intended. It's very disheartening. Okay, Jackie DeVoy, Playing God, an investigation into medical democide in the UK. Set that up for us real quick.
Well, that goes to the that first video we played. I have not looked at this video in its entirety. I had a short clip, but I don't know where it is, and I'd only be guessing if we try to jump into the middle of this one. I don't know where it is, because this is quite long, 50 minutes. But again, this particular one is describing what went on in the hospitals in the UK in terms of how the patients were treated and often, you know, went into the hospital but never came out.
Right. Any particular jump-off point? This is a long video. We can start the beginning
of
it.
I have no idea. I have not looked at this in its entirety.
Okay. Let's see what it has to offer just for a minute or two, and we'll see. And we've got one more video if we have time for that. I don't know if we will. All right, here.
And today I'm delighted to be joined by someone who I've had the pleasure of watching a lot on Twitter, bumped into once, but never had on, and that's Jackie DeVoy. Jackie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me on to Hearts of Oak.
It's great to have you, and people obviously will know you from all different things, from your Twitter handle, but also from you.
I'm going to move it forward.
She was in no pain. There was no shortness of breath. Yet she was on 6 or 7 different forms of medication.
We hadn't known about these side effects. There was nothing in the paperwork that she was given.
The night nurse just pumping with midazolam and morphine. Helena Bai was the first fatal case of the drug Epilim.
These big pharmaceutical companies are money-making businesses. They're not healthcare companies. That's what we're dealing with, a money-making, potentially fraudulent, certainly historically criminal enterprise.
And then children are also a market for unlicensed medications.
It's the luck of the draw, whether they benefit or it's causation of death.
The CQC said they would do an investigation, but NHS England stopped it.
Those two doctors were playing God. They were killing people.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It happens all the time. All right, we're going to stop that one there. It's an extensive documentary backed up by an interview, which is fine, but we don't have the time for it right now. Okay. Did you look at that Australian thing, or should we go to our readers?
What was the Australian thing?
The first coroner stepping forward, or not coroner, embalmer.
Yeah, I have not looked at that yet, but evidently, yeah, there is a embalmer from Australia who's stepping up and revealing what they've been seeing.
Which is not good. All right, let's grab a few of our...
She suffered much.
Oops.
She died needlessly.
Okay. Let me pull up. Let's go to our human file here. We've got a lot getting behind. Okay. June 5th. Three-year shedding sickness. CJD.
Okay.
You got that?
Yeah, let's do...
CJD?
Yeah, we could do that. How about... Do you want to do the sick from hydras?
Where
a little
is it?
Levity.
Yeah.
Sick from Hydras.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right, here. Let's split this in half. This would be fun. Okay. Now, all of you know, I think most of you, that Hydras were launched by several people, I won't even mention their names right now, as being a terrific find in their investigation and research as to what comes out of having been injected with the mRNA. And it was supposed to be a little octopus-like looking item that was apparently reproducing in the body and causing all sorts of trouble. It was a complete lie and fabrication. It had nothing to do with anything. It's a little aquatic plant-like animal, or animal-like plant, however you want, that lives in rancid water. It's common. All right.
Well, and to be clear, it's not a parasite.
No, it's just a little life form. That's all it is.
And the unique thing about it, though, is it has the ability to regenerate itself. And so for that reason, it's intriguing to these people who want to live forever.
In other words, you cut off a limb or one of the tentacles and it'll apparently regenerate.
Yeah.
All right. I am sick with sepsis in my bowels and liver deficiency, all due to swine flu vax in the past and through the close contact with the people who are infected with the current COVID killer shots, the contents of which I do not know, but know one thing for sure. It has Hydra microscopic parasites in it, which are known to live in water. They attach themselves to the lining of the bowels, followed by other organs, infecting all of them eventually, and corrupt and destroy healthy tissues, creating tumors and blockages of thick, unbreakable slime, which slime is actually them, and it has a very well known, by everybody in particular, a distinctive odor. If anybody interested, I will let you know what it smells of, because it is truly scary, and I won't share it here. All right, Hydra, not a parasite, just for openers. Go ahead.
And sepsis occurs in the blood, not the bowels. Sepsis is an infection of the bloodstream.
We covered that too, last time or the time before. Yeah.
All right, so she continues. The actual Hydra parasite, no, it's not a parasite, looks like a little octopus. Google it. Have been effectively treated by fenbendazole and ivermectin for over 40 years in medical practice. No, it hasn't. And the current ones we are dealing with are hard but possible to kill. Pharma called them cancer. It is not. Your body does not attack itself. They are alien to your body, parasites, and are very bad, or very real. Look out for that unusually thick and resilient slime in your relatives and pets, and treat them accordingly. Thank you, love to you all, and apologies for my hysterical posts in the past. I was dying, and I still might, but at least we've moved out of London now and live in Scotland in the forest, literally. Hopefully we will survive, and Lord, in all his majesty and mercy, will rescue all of us, humans and animals, soon.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's just a little case in point of somebody well-meaning who is completely out of the game, has no idea what the hell the truth is and what reality is, and is spewing forth this stuff, which is ludicrously incompetent, just to keep it simple. Crazy.
Yeah, there's so much misinformation out there. It's
and most of these people who get hold of it, they don't want to give it up. They think they've got the answer, and they become almost messianic in their willingness or their drive to push it on other people. All right, let's jump down to CJD. Let me see what we got here. All right, let's split this one too here. Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting me into this group. I'm looking for some information. My brother, who is 53, was admitted to the hospital about 3 weeks ago, and after an MRI and an EEG, the neurology staff has diagnosed him with CJD. he is exhibiting all the symptoms and is in a bad state right now, hardly eating or drinking, unable to speak most days. The lumbar puncture, spinal tap, protein test, however, which we waited 3 weeks for, has turned out to be negative. You know, Eric and I were talking earlier about this. How many times have we seen these people go in for test after test to find out what the hell's causing their terrible symptoms, and the tests are all negative? Negative. Here's another one. They're right there. The
The MRI, apparently they made this CJD diagnosis preliminarily on the MRI and EEG.
Yeah.
But, you know, it needs to be taken into consideration with other clinical symptoms and testing. And now this blood or plasma, spinal fluid,
yeah,
has come back negative.
The doctors say the sample may have had blood in it, and that's why it turned out negative. And they are so sure he has CJD that they don't even want to run another test. Based on him having all the symptoms, they are probably right. But because of all the conditions that are often misdiagnosed as CJD, I feel like I would, doing my due diligence, like another test, a second opinion, to completely rule out the possibility that he has something treatable. Go ahead.
Okay, so I was wondering, can anyone in this group recommend an excellent neurology doctor or team from a hospital anywhere in the country who you would recommend contacting for a second opinion? We are looking for a team that will order another protein test and do their due diligence to rule out autoimmune encephalitis and heavy metal poisoning and really do a full workup. If anyone has any great doctors you would recommend who we could contact to help us, I'd be so greatly appreciative. Thank you, and my heart goes out to you all. The disease is so brutal and devastating. My heart is broken for anyone who has to watch someone they love go through it. Sending love and prayers to everyone here. And we've got, there were many replies, but here's a good one. So sorry, CJD cannot be diagnosed definitively until postmortem, although his symptoms do sound like it. Please contact the CJD Foundation for the most accurate and up-to-date info. Many doctors do not know enough and are not aware of the new RT-QuIC test. That stands for real-time quaking-induced conversion.
Mm-hmm. That came from the CJD Foundation, which is a very good resource, we understand, for anybody who's looking for certainly baseline information. This is a frighteningly horrific way to die. And how many of them like that are there? They're all frighteningly horrific. I mean, anything from blood clotting and the removal of arms and legs and mucormycosis and CJD and hearts being just destroyed. And
turbo cancer.
It's endless. Turbo cancer all over the place. We know this. And I really wish there was some way we could look forward to holding these evil soldiers of Satan accountable for every injection that they put in people. Many of them knew.
And there's more in the pipeline. Don't forget, they literally just approved that RSV vaccine with an mRNA platform for use in older adults, 60-plus.
60-plus.
You know, they'll rubber stamp it for children soon enough.
Real quick.
Guaranteed.
Watch. They will. Oh, yes. Absolutely. And what will this particular mRNA platform elicit? What's it going to do to people? What proteins, like the spike, will it produce? We don't know yet.
Well, it's coded to produce the what they call the F protein. F stands for fusion. And it's an exterior protein on the virus. But we don't know what its biological activity is.
No.
I can't imagine anything's more toxic than the spike, but, you know, we don't know.
I don't know. All right. We have to run. We're over time here. Great job. Thank you. Be well.
Okay, Jeff.
Be safe.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
All right. Back with more right after this very short pause.